Later in the show, do you need to let your car warm up or not? Up first today, ELT listener Jonathan reached out to our helpline about a tiny triangle he thinks deserves some recognition.
It's this tiny little thing. It's like it's smaller than, you know, the nail on my pinky finger. It's just a triangle, really, but it's really helpful.
This triangle that Jonathan is calling about, it has a sort of life hacker YouTube following.
It's one that I actually only just discovered.
I just learned this secret that I wish I knew forever.
I don't know why this isn't just something that everybody knows, but it's so helpful.
The arrow on the gas gauge points you what side
the gas tank indicator arrow in your car. If you've never seen it, look at the gas gauge. You'll see probably a fuel pump icon, and next to it, there's an arrow or a triangle. And it is pointing to the side of your car that the gas tank is on.
Mind-boggling. I never knew.
But the inventor has never been acknowledged, and ELT listener Jonathan will not stand for it.
I'm just hoping you can give some credit to whoever came up with this small but great invention.
Challenge accepted. Here to help us on our quest to find the never-credited inventor of the little arrow is Jason Torchinsky.
I have a bunch of cars. A 1990 Nissan POW, a 1973 VW Beetle, 73 Reliant Scimitar.
Jason is the senior editor at the car site Jalopnik, and besides having an encyclopedic knowledge of cars, he also has relevant lived experience.
I'm a frequent user and enthusiast of gas tanks. I often fill them with petroleum and then drain them through an engine.
So, Jason, as a car expert, first thing, do you think this arrow is worth celebrating?
Absolutely. I mean, because, yeah, if you think about the problem it's solving, when you're pulling into a gas station, especially in a busy city, you're dealing with potential jackasses on either side. And if you do it wrong, you either have the awkward... awkward option of trying to stretch the hose over the, roof of your car.
Have you ever done the stretch? The hose stretch?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've done the stretch before.
Yeah, we all have.
Yeah. Yeah, we all, it's, no one's proud, but, it happens. Or you may end up having to, back your car up in an awkward way and everybody's honking at you. It's the sort of thing that could end up being a surprisingly substantial ass pain. This is just a very easy way to solve the problem before you even get in there. I mean, it makes life a lot easier.
Yes, this tiny triangle has saved hundreds of millions of people from substantial ass pain.
Yes.
And yet there is no documentation of who invented it. Jason, we reached out to car manufacturers, auto industry writers, car enthusiasts, message boards, people who repair instrument panels, and we are not any closer.
Yeah, this is a very tricky thing to research because no car maker was putting it in ads really and highlighting it as new for 81, little arrow.
So do you have any leads for us? How long has this arrow been around?
Well, it's only fairly recently that people have really kind of cared about this thing because there was a time when it wasn't uncommon for a car to have the fuel filler in the best possible spot, which is in the middle, because then it does not matter which side you're on at all.
By the back bumper?
Yeah, near the back bumper. American cars especially used to love to hide it behind the license plate.
That's genius.
It's great, but they can't do that anymore for safety reasons. Because someone rams you in the back, a central-mounted fuel filler would usually mean that you're just going to dump gasoline all over the ground.
I can see why that might be a problem.
Yeah.
So when does the arrow become common on gas gauges?
I'd say it's been common-ish for decades. Definitely since the 90s it's been common.
All right. So do you have a hypothesis of where this began?
I don't know. Okay, I've done some research. I don't know if I have the definitive answer, but the earliest one I found, I would peg it in 1976, a Mercedes-Benz, and on its fuel gauge... What it had was a lot of cars have a low fuel light to let you know when you have a gallon or so left. So it had a low fuel light, but whoever designed it decided to make that low fuel light in the shape of a little triangle pointing towards the right, which is where your fuel filler would be.
Okay, I'm looking. I just pulled it up. I'm looking at it. So it's a little triangle that illuminates when you're low on gas and it points to the right, which happens to be where the fuel tank is.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the first car you've seen with the unambiguous fuel tank on this side, arrow?
I believe there was a Ford in the mid to late 80s, I think the Ford F-150 trucks and a number of other cars did have the Arrow. Late 80s, early 90s, I think.
Late 80s, early 90s Ford.
I think so.
All right, awesome. Thanks for these tips.
This is a good question. I love finding out firsts of stuff like this, and it's always more difficult than you'd think.
Herzlich willkommen im Mercedes-Benz Classic Contact Center. Vielen Dank für Ihren Anruf.
So we reached out to Mercedes, who said nine to recording, but they did answer our questions. We asked, when did you first put the gas tank Arrow in your cars? And they said 1997. So that's way later than the first Ford sighting. And when we asked about the 1970s ambiguous low fuel light triangle, they were like, oh, neat. Maybe we did invent it. But they didn't have any records or documentation supporting that idea. In other words, Mercedes was a dead end.
Mercedes-Benz Museums.
So we backed the car out, and after some more dead ends, an illegal U-turn, an unmarked cul-de-sac, and a treacherous rotary, finally, we got somewhere.
Hi, this is Melissa from the Henry Ford Museum.
And here we had better luck.
Yes, I know the inventor.
And after the break, you'll meet him.
I'm impressed with your research and your digging.
It was hard to find you.
I'm not surprised.
Am I right to say you are the inventor of the gas tank Arrow?
I feel I am, yes.
This is Jim Moylan.
I'm a retired Ford interior trim engineer.
His focus was on designing the instrument panel on Ford cars.
Instrument panels, what you call, the rest of the world call dashboards.
So when did the idea come to you?
I thought back as best I could. Can't get that light bulb moment, but I can tell you when I wrote it down. And that was when I had to go to a meeting in another building on a rainy day.
It was April 1986, and because it was raining, Jim decided to take a pool car, one of the shared company cars kept in the lot.
And when I went to get the pool car, I turned it on, I started it and noticed the gas gauge was empty. So that was a bad start.
You might be able to guess where this is going.
Pulled up to the gas pump on the wrong side, so I had to move it.
His trench coat gets drenched. But instead of just being mad and frustrated, Jim said, I can fix this.
And I got back to my office after the meeting, and without even taking my coat off, I sat down and started writing the first draft of this proposal. I addressed it to the head of our division's product planning. I'd like to propose a small addition to future IP cluster graphics.
Jim still has the memo he wrote.
The indicator or symbol would be located near the fuel gauge and simply describe to the driver on which side of the vehicle the fuel fill door is located. So I typed it up and turned it in and forgot completely about it.
And that's it. His bosses liked it, and the Arrow first appeared in 1989 Escorts and Tracers. And then it swiftly spread to other cars. And the way it spread may have to do with this common form of carmaker espionage.
Every company buys first models of a competitive car as soon as they can, and they take them apart, part by part, bumper to bumper. And somewhere along the line, somebody took apart these first Ford models and said, what the heck is that? And that seems like a good idea. And then they picked it up one by one.
Jason from Jalopnik said that, yeah, this is typically how car inventions spread.
Car makers look at each other's products all the time. Everybody's looking over everybody's shoulder. So once this thing came around, it's not hard to see how it would have spread and rapidly ramped up.
And Jim's Arrow spread everywhere.
Literally, this is on almost every modern car. The amount this has been disseminated across the industry is huge. Really. I mean, this is a small thing, but it's a big thing as well.
Jim, have you ever gotten public recognition?
No, not by name. No, just like at my retirement party.
Jim never applied for a patent. He didn't think it was technical enough. But occasionally, he'll point out the Arrow.
Sometimes when I'm at a gas pump getting my own gas and a car comes in the wrong way, gets out and turns around, if the person seems friendly enough, I'll speak to them about, you know, there's an arrow there that could help you with that next time.
Do you ever let them know that you're the one who came up with the idea?
I would never do that. I would never bring it up to like a stranger.
There was one stranger who needed to know.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
We let listener Jonathan know what we found out about his question.
I guess it should be known as the Moylan arrow.
His family refers to it as the Moylan arrow.
Amazing. That's wonderful.
Jonathan, this was a great suggestion, and I'm really glad we're doing it in Nobel season.
I mean, those little kinds of helpful inventions often make more of a difference to me than, some major advance in theoretical physics. So I think those small inventions need credit too.
Coming up next, we answer an age-old car question.
My dad is convinced you have to let your car warm up.
Do you need to let your car warm up? Jason Torchinski of Jalopnik will answer that and weigh in on other ELT listener carspiracies.
How are we defining carspiracy exactly?
Like a fixed belief that perhaps defies logic about your car.
Oh, okay.
Let me give you a for instance.
One thing that I am 100% certain of is that if you name your car, you get better parking.
I don't think there's any way to prove that, but...
She had proof.
I have a little Honda Fit. His name is Richard Simmons. And if I'm parking, I just say, Richard, come on, you got this, Richard. Don't let me down. And sure enough, I'll get parking like right in front.
Jason, this next one could be a matter of life and death. And it comes from listener Lindsay, and it's really about her brother's carspiracy.
He really stresses me out every time he goes to fuel up the gas tank in his car because he refuses to turn his car off and he leaves the engine running while he's pumping his gas. And I'm always worried he's going to make us both explode.
Two things. Why? What's the benefit? You're literally going nowhere and still burning gas while you're putting gas in it.
I think it's possible that Lindsay's brother suffers from you're not the boss of me syndrome.
He is convinced that this is unnecessary and not something that he needs to do.
Is Lindsay gonna explode?
Well, there is a slight fire risk because when a car is running, parts get hot. Why chance it? We're talking about a gasoline fire. If there's anything you could do to maybe not have a gasoline fire in your day, I'd say take advantage of it. Do it.
So my grandma, I don't have very many memories of her, but one thing that I definitely do remember her telling me when I was pretty young was that if you're a really good driver, you don't actually ever need to use the brakes.
I mean, okay, I see what she's saying. If you're constantly on and off the brakes, you're either accelerating too much for the situation, you're not looking ahead, you're not planning. I mean, I could see why she might say that, but a blanket rule that a good driver doesn't use the brakes is a terrible idea.
Well, speaking of taking your feet off the pedals, we had an alarming number of listeners call in about this practice.
Every time I go over train tracks, I lift my feet.
I actually do raise my feet when I drive over the train track.
It's something I've done my entire life.
Like, what's the thinking there?
It's a superstition.
Kind of like this little Pascal's wager. Like, do I really want to chance it?
Okay, so, and I think it comes from a long, long, long time ago. We're talking like the 30s and 40s. In a manual transmission car, maybe if you were in the middle of shifting a gear over the train tracks, like you had the clutch in and you were actually in the process of shifting a gear, maybe if that train track was big enough and steep enough and jostled the car to such a degree and the condition of the car was already iffy, maybe you could cause some problems.
There might be a kernel of truth to this carspiracy.
Maybe.
Okay, Jason, this might be the most common car question we got from our callers.
Hi, this is Melissa, and my dad is convinced you have to let your car warm up.
Winter is coming. Do you need to warm up your car?
You know, there's a lot of back and forth on should you let a car warm up or not.
Yes, we got that impression. So we called a bunch of car experts on this.
Thank you for holding.
AAA, Pep Boys, auto mechanics. And this was the big takeaway on whether you need to let your car warm up.
You know, it used to be true. It's not true anymore.
Not anymore.
Years ago, when cars had carburetors, you'd go out, you'd pump the gas pedal 3 times, you'd turn the key, it would race up. And if it wasn't tuned just right, you'd go to put it in gear and boom, it would stall.
So cars used to need to warm up, but thanks to things like fuel injection and improved oil, engines now work better in the cold. So if you have a newish car, you don't really need to let it warm up. Here's AAA.
Get in the car, start it up. By the time you put your seatbelt on, find your favorite radio station, your car has warmed up sufficiently to drive it.
Jason, what do you do with your cars?
Maybe because I tend to drive older cars, I believe when it's really, really cold, it's actually worth it to do a little bit of warm-up.
How much is a little bit?
I'm talking like a minute tops. Just let the engine get going, let the oil flow around, drive it a little bit easy when you're first taking off. Good to go, you know, your car is your partner. Work with it, you know? Don't just whip it and make it do what you say right then. Like, be a little sympathetic to its needs.
That is something that we heard from everyone. Don't peel out of the driveway on a cold day.
Yeah, like, why? What are you proving there?
Jason, do you have any carspiracies?
There are some. I mean, cars are such emotional things. I think people who know their cars very well can often tell when something's not right by very subtle signals, sounds, smells.
Like the way people are tuned to their pets or something.
Yeah, and I think that almost counts as a sort of very subtle communication that's beyond what we normally have with other machines.
Why are we so emotionally attached to our cars?
I think they're more personal than other machines. They're an extension of us, and we get seen in it, in the way we get seen in clothing. There's cars that you feel comfortable in, you're okay being seen in, you want associated with you, and there's cars that you don't want anybody seeing you drive. And these vary wildly from person to person. It's very personal and idiosyncratic. So I believe the human car connection is richer than we give it credit for, and there are times when it possibly even defies rational logic.
Thanks for coming on, Jason.
Thanks, I've had fun.
We were inspired by Jonathan's question and the story of the Moylan Aero. So we're creating a new segment, the ELT Bulletin Board of Glory, a space to honor inventors of all those little things that make life better but don't often get recognized. And we're looking for your nominations. Do you have a favorite undersung invention? Send it our way. We'll try to track down the inventor. You can email us at elt@gimletmedia.com, subject line glory, or call us 833-RING-ELT. And as always, if you have a burning question, give us a call. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Kristen Clark, Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Ian Chillug and Caitlin Kenny are our consulting editors. Cedric Wilson, Bobby Lord, and Emma Munger mixed this episode. Scoring by Dara Hirsch. Special thanks to Ronald Ahrens, the Henry Ford Museum, Andrea Berg and all our car experts, Greg Russ from Pep Boys, Dave at Urban Classics, Julia at Great Bear, Timothy at the Automotive Maintenance and Repair Association, AAA's car doctor John Paul, and Alex at Amco Transmissions on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. I am self-driving. Goodbye.